This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And it's a moment of lucidity that reminds us that we must build a common future on win-win projects.
That's Jean-Jacques Lumumba offering a message to the Belgian people. He is the grandson of Patrice Lumumba, the first president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Details coming up. Also, a look at the extradition case for Mozambique's former finance minister. We'll have these stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Belgium's King Philip is in the Democratic Republic of Congo and has returned the first of an estimated 80,000 artifacts taken from the country during colonial rule. The king's trip comes as Belgium is preparing to return to Kinshasa the last remains of Patrice Lumumba, a hero of the anti-colonial struggle and short-lived first prime minister of the independent Congo. Earlier, I spoke with Jean-Jacques Lumumba, the grandson of Patrice Lumumba.
You say the king came to reaffirm his regret expressed in 2020 on the colonial past, which is a good thing, but doesn't call into question the opportunity of restorative justice between the two peoples to heal the wounds of our past.
The remains, like according to news reports, is that the king is bringing back the teeth. Tell me a little more about that.
I cannot speak on behalf of the Lumumba family not having this quality of head of family, but I can speak on my own behalf and give you my opinion. It's, for me, the beginning of another era which should make it possible to render justice to the Congolese people. Because Patrice Lumumba, Paulo and the people were the authority, and Lumumba was the first prime minister. It's to render justice to the Congolese people for this human act and to uphold injustice committed at whole level, because without justice, no lasting peace is possible.
If I told you to give a message to the king because he did this, what would you say?
My message for the king is one of brotherhood and solidarity in truth, and justice and a bright common future.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Anything I want to tell at Belgian people. We are a friendly people with whom we must build bridges and win-win partnership, like our ambition of Congo to be a power in several areas, given our strategic position and our natural resources in the agricultural fields, educational, cultural, scientific, and technological. And is a message I can give in Belgian people. And it's a moment of lucidity that reminds us that we must build a common future on win-win project, and the need for the Congo to build a serious state through effective justice and a republican army, and because we must fight against corruption.
That was Jean-Jacques Lumumba, the grandson of the late Patrice Lumumba. He spoke to me from Paris. A South African court says Manuel Chang, the former Mozambique finance minister, should be extradited from South Africa to the United States to face charges related to his role in a $2 billion sovereign debt scandal. South Africa's Constitutional Court, the highest in the country, on Tuesday dismissed an application by Mozambique's government to appeal a November 2021 High Court order that Chang be extradited to the U.S. He's been in custody in a prison near Johannesburg since his arrest in December 2018 on a U.S. warrant. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Borges Namari, a researcher for the Center for Public Integrity in Maputo, and they began their discussion by talking about the significance of the ruling.
Well, it means that Mozambique has lost one more battle in this struggle to try to bring Chang to Mozambique. This is not the end of the case, of course. There is still pending a decision by the Supreme Court whether Mozambique can or no appeal against the decision taken last November. But this is very bad for Mozambique, because Mozambique wanted to have a kind of shortcut, if you may allow me to use that expression, to submit appeal to the Constitutional Court. And basically, it will be funded in the human rights of Mr. Chang, who is staying in the prison now, who is under custody for more than 3 years. So with that rejection, it means Mozambique will have to wait for the decision from the Supreme Court.
Why is Mozambique so interested in having Mr. Chang tried in Mozambique and not the USA?
I understand why Mozambique is so interested to bring Chang back. Chang was the Minister of the Finance for the last for 10 years. So having him tried abroad, that's not comfortable to the government, of course. I think non-government in the world would like to have its former Minister of Finance tried abroad. I think that is reasonable. But the point is that while Chang was in Mozambique, he was not, he was not made definite. So he was free here, was his excellence. So Mozambique didn't want to follow this case. Only when the United States started the case, arrested Chang, now Mozambique is going behind. So I think Mozambique is not correct by doing that. But okay, I understand, as I said, that the government will want to prevent it to having his Minister of Finance tried in the United States. I think they are fearing that Chang might reveal more and more information that otherwise could not be revealed if he's in Mozambique.
And what do you think that means for the relationship between Mozambique and the United States and South Africa?
I think the relationship between the two countries are very good. And it's important that the institutions which are taking the decision so far are not government institutions, but the justice, and the justice is independent. So I think it won't affect at all the relationship between the two countries. South Africa can tell Mozambique, look, we did enough. Our two ministers of justice signed a extradition to Mr. Chang to Mozambique, but then the court denied. And then it's a court decision. It's a court decision. What can we do? So here we wait to see what the United States will do. If the United States will withdraw the application to extradite Mr. Chang to the United States, or will maintain it. So let's see what happens. But I think it is not going to affect the relationship, which are further more than just the Chang case.
And finally, if Mr. Chang is extradited to the United States, what would happen to the other 19 suspects who are held in Mozambique?
I think the case are independent. So as you may know, the other 19 in Mozambique have been already tried while Chang is in South Africa. So it doesn't affect neither positively or negatively the case ongoing in Mozambique. So, as you know, crime is individual. So, Chang in the United States or in South Africa, the case continues in Mozambique. While what I really expect, if he is extradited to the United States, that he can reveal more and more information. But if you look, you will see that, good part of the information that we know here in Mozambique about this case, it came from the United States trial of Jambu Sane. So I think for access to information, for Mozambicans to know how this scandal has been planned, how this scandal has been, how this scam has been designed, it's important to Chang to be tried in independent justice like the United States. In Mozambique, I do expect more.
That was Borges Namari, a researcher for the Center for Public Integrity in Maputo, speaking with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. Talks aimed at ending Sudan's ongoing political deadlock began today, although the country's main pro-democracy alliance is boycotting the meeting. The alliance opposes the continued police crackdown on those protesting last October's military coup. The military's takeover upended Sudan's short-lived, fragile democratic transition and plunged the East African nation into turmoil. Sudan has been transitioning to democracy after nearly three decades of repression and international isolation under former President Omar al-Bashir. A popular uprising pushed the military to remove al-Bashir in April 2019. The Associated Press reports the joint peace efforts is brokered by the UN political mission in Sudan, the African Union, and the eight-nation East African Regional Group, Intergovernmental Authority in Development. The effort aims to bring the generals and an array of political and protest groups to the negotiating table. Nigeria's ruling party, the All Progressive Congress, APC, today picked former Lagos State Governor Bola Tinubu as its candidate to run for president in elections next February. President Muhammadu Buhari steps down next year after serving the maximum 8 years allowed by the Constitution. Tinubu, 70, who was in charge of Nigeria's commercial capital from 1999 to 2007, defeated 13 other candidates in the APC primaries. Tinubu built a strong support base during his 8 years as governor of Lagos. Since stepping down, he has remained highly influential, with many of his former protégés in powerful positions in government and business. Supporters portray him as an effective administrator who hires committed technocrats to get jobs done. Critics, however, say he doled out lucrative contracts and plume jobs to his friends. Tinubu rejects that description. His main opponent will be Atiku Abubakar, who was vice president from 1999 to 2007 under former President Olusegun Obasanjo. Atiku represents the People's Democratic Party. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. To all our listeners, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Opposition parties in South Africa are demanding an independent investigation into an alleged cover-up of the theft of a large amount of money from President Cyril Ramaphosa's ranch in 2020. The president has said he was robbed of cash he'd earned from selling game animals. But as Darren Taylor reports, Ramaphosa's explanations raises more questions than answers.
The theft at the president's farm only became public when a former intelligence chief filed a criminal case against Cyril Ramaphosa last week. In his affidavit, Arthur Fraser alleges the president didn't report the theft of $4 million because the cash was from criminal activity. Ramaphosa denies this, saying he reported the matter to the police. He also says the money stolen from him was much less than $4 million. At an African National Congress, ANC, meeting, Ramaphosa suggested he was the victim of a political smear campaign.
They have their own political agenda, but it will not deter me from fighting corruption because I have never stolen taxpayers' money.
Since he became president in 2018, replacing Jacob Zuma, Ramaphosa has repeatedly vowed to rid the ANC of officials he refers to as criminals. His investigators have arrested some of Zuma's alleged accomplices in the looting of hundreds of billions of taxpayer rands. Zuma also is under investigation. But Fraser's charges mean South Africans are now questioning if Ramaphosa, one of Africa's richest men, is as clean as he says he is. Investigative journalist Sam Saul says police in neighboring Namibia linked the transfer of 6 million rands from South Africa to Namibian accounts to suspects in the theft at Ramaphosa's ranch in June 2020.
It seems very likely that 6 million rand was not the full amount. There are indications that other money was physically smuggled. The issue is why a criminal police charge was not laid and properly investigated. The issue is why, when the Namibians wanted to follow this up and in fact sent the South Africans a formal request for mutual legal assistance, that went nowhere.
Opposition parties and the media have so far been unable to find a police docket related to the incident. Saul says this is raising many questions about Ramaphosa's conduct, including exactly how much foreign currency does the president earn and does he declare it as the law demands. Fraser says he has evidence to prove a cover-up. Political analyst Oscar van Heerden says this wouldn't surprise him, as the former state security official isn't a frivolous man.
What we do know about Arthur Fraser is that he doesn't make claims lightly. He's the consummate public servant. He serves the leader. He served three presidents. He, for the most part, having been head of national intelligence, keeps quiet. But that rule obviously doesn't hold when he becomes the target himself.
A commission of inquiry into corruption that Ramaphosa instituted implicated Fraser in theft of intelligence funds, which he denies. At a media briefing yesterday, Economic Freedom Fighters leader Julius Malema said he had more evidence of Ramaphosa using his farm to launder illicit money. He wants party members to work non-stop to oust Ramaphosa.
We call upon all the fighters and the ground forces to start treating Ramaphosa as such. We'll start on Thursday and it will be wire until he let go of that office. That office must be occupied by a man of integrity, not a hypocrite, not a man.
However, many accuse Malema of hypocrisy. There have been repeated news reports alleging he's been involved in corruption. The EFF leader denies the allegations. For now, however, it's Ramaphosa who can't escape the spotlight. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Cameroon's military says it has arrested four of its troops for the killing of 9 civilians, including 4 women and a baby. A military spokesman says the troops fired on villagers after not getting any help in their search for a missing colleague in the rebel-prone area. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says the troops were deployed in the northwest village of Misong on June 1 to search for their missing colleague. A military statement Tuesday night said villagers were deviant in their behavior toward the troops, who then fired on the unarmed civilians. The rare statement of military wrongdoing said the troops killed 4 women, 4 men, and an 18-month-old girl, while a 12-year-old was injured. Relatives of the victims, who did not want to be identified for fear of retaliation, told VOA the troops got angry when the villagers refused to help them find their missing colleague. They said the troops were demanding villagers show them rebel hideouts, which they were afraid to do for fear of rebel payback. Tamfu Richard is a human rights lawyer and member of the Cameroon Bar Council. He notes it is not the first time the military has arrested troops for atrocities and that victims are still waiting for justice.
We don't have the feeling that the government itself is ready and willing to punish its element. We have witnessed that with the Ngarbu case, which up till now is still pending before the court. The government should hold these officers accountable and make sure that they face the law and that severe sanctions should be meted on them. It's not permitted during a war period that human rights should be violated or that you should kill innocent civilians.
Cameroon's military stormed Ngarbu a northwestern village in February 2020, killing 21 civilians. Authorities initially denied that troops committed the massacre, calling the accusation separatist propaganda. But after international pressure, Cameroon authorities admitted troops were responsible. Joseph Vincent Tuda Ebode is a conflict resolution specialist at the University of Yaoundé.
C'est une réponse mal placée. D'abord, les forces de défense représentent l'État.
He says it is surprising that Cameroon's military, which prides itself on high-quality training and respect for human rights, opened fire on unarmed civilians. Ebode says the abuse has scared many civilians from helping government troops by sharing information on separatist activities. He says if the military does not bring arrested troops to justice immediately, civilians may even begin sympathizing with separatists who claim they are protecting English-speaking Cameroonians from military brutality. Rights groups have accused both Cameroon's military and Anglophone separatists of killing civilians and torching their homes during the five-year conflict. Both sides reject the accusations as intended to tarnish their image. Unrest in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions began in 2016 after teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of French speakers in the officially bilingual country. The military responded with a crackdown, and rebels took up arms, saying they had to defend the minority English speakers. The UN says clashes between the two sides have left at least 3,300 people dead and more than 750,000 internally displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Botswana's army chief says the country faces increasing threats of terrorism following last year's decision to send troops to fight Islamic insurgents in Mozambique. From Abrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Briefing the National Assembly this week, the Botswana Defense Forces BDF commander, Placid Sekgogo, said the country has become a soft target for terrorists.
Honorable Chairperson, we, as the Defense Force, we continue to have challenges in respect to cyber crime, terrorism, because we are now clearly in Mozambique specifically because of terrorism. And we do realize that our footprint there creates an even bigger vulnerability here.
He says Botswana needs to scale up efforts to counter the terrorism risks.
So we must be ready together with our sister agencies to be able to address that, particularly ready in terms of intelligence gathering, to be able to make sure that we are not reactive, but rather proactive to that particular challenge.
Botswana was one of the first Southern African countries to send nearly 300 troops to fight violent extremism in natural resources-rich Cabo Delgado. Angola, Lesotho, South Africa, and Tanzania also contributed soldiers. Sekgogo says while the SADC mission has managed to push back the insurgents, they haven't gone away.
The threat remains. We have been able to disrupt, dislodge Al-Sunnah al-Jamal. They're no longer able to have freedom of movement as they would have desired. They're no longer able to now say that at a point where the enemy is weak and they are on the upper hand, they have actually reversed and regressed. I say they're still a threat because the ideology still continues to exist.
After nearly a year in Cabo Delgado, the SADC operation is de-escalating from combat to peacekeeping, amid notable progress in bringing stability to the region. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for listening to The Voice of America.